This is One Universe at a Time. I'm Brian Corberline. Electric cars and solar panels on our houses are great ideas, but they can be made more practical with key upgrades to our electrical infrastructure. Dr. Eric Williams, Associate Professor of Sustainability at the Rochester Institute of Technology, talks to us today about Elon Musk's recent announcement of home battery banks and how our power system needs to change to accommodate solar and wind energy technology. A lot of people like to complain about our power grid, and part of it is because it's been around for so long. It's kind of the best power grid that the early 1900s can provide. What do you look at in terms of this? I mean, what is your area of interest related
to
it?
I guess I see that the main challenge is how to make it more sustainable from an environmental perspective, while at the same time keeping the cost of energy to be reasonable. Okay. Because energy plays such a fundamental role in the economy, and so, you know, if it's too expensive, this causes real problems.
Right.
At the same time, carbon gets a lot of press these days, but then clearly that's important, but also there's energy security. There's all the traditional pollutants like sulfur and particulate soots and these things.
Right.
And so really it's about trying to understand how to better manage those two factors, economics, environment, as we move into the future.
I know a lot of people kind of think of electricity as being the clean way of doing things. At least we're not burning fossil fuels. If we have an electric car, then everything will be solved. And that's not really the case, right? I mean, a lot of the power is made from things like coal and stuff like that.
People do analyses called life cycle assessments or WELT wheels, where they look at the total carbon or other pollutants in order to drive a mile with a car. And it turns out that if you run a car off of coal-based electricity, you'll actually emit more carbon than if with a conventional gasoline car. So an electric vehicle is only as clean as the grid that you power it with.
So the electric cars won't save us without an improvement in
right.
the power grid.
Yes, absolutely.
We have power generators, and then we have the power grid system. And if I understand it correctly, we have like three areas, east, west, and Texas.
Oh, we have, depends on how you divide it up. It can be more like 11 or so
okay.
grid regions. For example, Texas is its own grid,
right?
Which is curious. When they divide the grids into those 11 regions, that has to do with the interconnection. I mean, those regions may be many utility companies within those regions.
Right.
But in terms of being able to ship power between different areas, the idea is that they're more or less self-contained in terms of those.
And different regions then have different levels of kind of non-carbon sources.
Absolutely.
So some will use more nuclear. We get a lot of hydropower from Niagara Falls. The Midwest, if I understand it, uses a lot of coal.
Yes,
primary thing.
Yes, and Northwest has a lot of hydropower.
Mm-hmm.
So, it really depends on which region you're in terms of the mix of technologies that are used to make the electricity, and along with that, the environmental impacts for that electricity.
Like right now in the United States, about what percentage is done with coal and oil and carbon producing, and what percentage would be hydro and nuclear? And
I think we're 20% nuclear, around 10% hydro, 60 or 70% fossil, and that fossil is coal and gas primarily, and then the rest a bit of wind and other renewables.
Okay, so
which is really the wind and solar is, you know, less than 5% is my understanding.
Okay, so about 60%, 70% is coal and natural gas.
Yes.
And those produce carbon.
Yes, roughly to the extent.
Roughly to the extent. Right.
I remember. But yes, it's big, a majority.
In that range. So, yes. So you know, on a rough order, we're talking about 3/4 of it.
Yes.
So if we want to make more efficient power generation, I mean, is it just simply a matter of kind of replacing coal and gas with alternative energy? Is that the big challenge right now, or is it the architecture of the power grid itself that's a problem?
The architecture relates to the ability to bring more renewables onto the grid. But let's start with the two main challenges to moving towards a renewable grid, say based on primarily wind, solar, some geothermal. Mm-hmm. One is economics, in that even if you can use those sources perfectly well, there's still considerably more. Well, wind, if you have a good site, is reasonably cheap. Solar is still quite a bit more expensive than coal or natural gas. But an additional piece of that is the variability in wind power. And so the central challenge of the grid is that at any moment in time, you have a bunch of customers and say, look, I want X. watts of power, and the utility has to deliver exactly that 24 hours a day. And well, the sun only shines during the day, and the sun and the wind blows during different times.
Right.
And unless you can store, build up a bunch of extra renewable capacity and store it for later, then it's really tough to deliver, you know, say all or most of the grid electricity with the renewables.
Right.
And storage is really expensive, batteries, pumped hydro. And so there's the direct cost of a kilowatt hour by solar, but then depending on when you need it, there could be an additional cost to storage that could be much actually larger than the original cost to generate it.
Right. And in some ways, it seems like it's contradictory, because during the night is when you're going to want to use lights and stuff and use more electric power. That's when people are home, but that's not when it's being generated. It's being generated during the day when people are out of work.
And that's also region dependent. So if you're living, if you're in the southern climate where it's warmer, there's a huge peak electricity demand towards 3 or 4 p.m., which is actually corresponds pretty well to the solar peak. But then if, you know, in Rochester, we don't use so much.
it's kind of, we don't have some light here.
And wind, it really depends on, you know, so a lot of wind blows at night, but then in some places and other places, it may not have that same temporal pattern.
Right. And when they become controversial, because some people don't want the wind towers in their view space. I think it ruins
Cape Wind, which has been in perpetual
limbo. Well, I know we have them here in the kind of western New York area. And I know in the Southern Tier area, it's been somewhat controversial, because some people like them and like to see them, and other people just hate it because they want to see the tree line without, you know, these stupid wind towers there.
Yeah, they not in my backyard factor is also a problem. Even for solar.
Right.
You know, apparently, you know, they were trying to get solar in the desert, and then their environmentalists were concerned about its effect on
the... It's going to damage the desert. We do that with nuclear, you know, everybody. Nuclear may be nice, but nobody wants it next
to them. I think with nuclear, the risks seem pretty reasonable to me.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, it's clear that the public opinion is so...
It doesn't matter how safe it is. No one's going to buy that.
I don't work on nuclear. I'm really trying to figure out whether the renewables can work.
So it sounds like we're both blessed and cursed by the cheap efficiency of fossil fuels. They contain a lot of energy, and they're easy to use.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we're, you know, we have that legacy of the dinosaurs and the plants, that, you know, from 300 million years ago that we're living off of.
Right. So in terms of the architecture, we talk about this antiquated grid system, and that, you know, it's been around for a long time. It's very mechanical based, in which the switches and everything are still done by the mechanics. And I know there's been talk about something like a smart grid, the idea of making it network intelligent or something.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, the antiquity of the grid is somewhat overstated. The stuff doesn't last hundreds of years, and so they do put in new substations and swap out the transformers and such forth.
Right.
It's not that old, but at the same time, there are an information technology with smart grid has opens up all kinds of windows to better understand what we're using in order to better integrate renewables into the grid, to let people sell power to the utilities and other customers. And we haven't gone that far overall in terms of adopting these technologies. And I think a lot of it, well, the way that we generally run utilities is it's a regulated monopoly. And so generally speaking, they don't have a whole lot of incentive to change things.
Regulated monopoly and innovation are not two things that generally go hand in hand.
Right, right. But I don't know if you've they're renewing the energy vision in New York State. Have you kept up? Have you
heard? No, I haven't heard about that.
Oh, that's New York State is the hotbed of utility revolution.
Yeah.
Because the New York Commission has said, you know, all right, utilities, you've had this guaranteed rate of return in this system. This era will end, and you will offer a new set of energy products. If they're going to provide solar power to you during the peak, you must provide them. You know, you must be able to pay them a price that's reflective of that value. There's this furor of activity to figure out what this is going to be, and the utilities are
freaking
out. Let's use the name. Yeah, they're freaking out basically, and they've had a pretty stable, simple situation to deal with.
Right.
So it's very exciting time in New York, and the world is, as I understand, watching us to see how this is going to play out. But there's a lot of questions on how do we reorganize utilities so that the smart grid will be part of the business model that utilities run
by. And having to meter both ways, having to address a surge of electricity that comes into the grid,
yeah,
and having to manage that. All of a sudden, it's sunny in some place, and everybody's generating power.
Yeah, and yeah, Germany is in real trouble apparently because they didn't really change their utility model. At the same time, they subsidized the heck out of solar, and they guaranteed everybody to generate solar to get a good price for all the solar. And so now the utilities are getting all this solar, and they don't know what to do with it.
They don't have any way to store it.
You know, and so I was at a conference last year where the German utilities came, and they're saying, it's a mess. We don't know what to do.
So a cautionary tale then.
Yeah, I think there's, you know, it's not just putting in the solar, but it's having the system set up so that you can use it and that the utilities still have a business model that works.
Right. So you have to make it cost effective, and you have to make it efficient, and you have to make it worth your while all at the same time, while the thing still has to operate the whole time in which you're upgrading everything.
Yes, yeah. So
it's a trying to fix a moving plane.
Well, on the other hand, it's not going to be we're going to switch all to solar one day. It's going to be a very step-by-step.
It's going to be a very gradual
thing. And with utility, there's such long time scales with anything you do, because you'll build a coal plant, and it's not something that lasts for 5 years. It's something that lasts for 20 or 30 or more.
Right, it takes five years to build.
Yeah, and so the cost of all these things were really, we built out this grid sort of assuming that all this stuff we're going to be using it for quite a while.
Right.
And so even rapid change is going to be relatively
not so rapid. Slow, rapid change. Right. The race of the turtle, as it were.
Yeah.
Now, I know in the press recently, Tesla's gotten a lot of press about their new home battery system. And they've been making electric cars.
Right.
And now they're talking about having a storage system for solar power or for powering your house. Is this as revolutionary as some would argue, or is this evolutionary?
Well, it's definitely an achievement, but on the other hand, it's not near. I don't see it as nearly as revolutionary as some of the hyperbole in the press has put
okay.
it. What they've offered, which is it's a very competitive product. Well, one of the products is a residential system, 10 kilowatts for $3,500.
Mm-hmm.
So that's $250 per kilowatt for a good lithium system. So, you know, this is a substantial cost reduction in a lithium system.
Usually they were like $20,000 or something?
I think it used to be $500 a kilowatt.
Okay.
And I haven't tracked the whole evolution
right.
of the prices, but this is definitely compared to the past, and a very reasonably priced system. At the current price point, how important that is kind of depends on what you want to use the batteries for.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, if you want to go off-grid, and you're home, you want to go off-grid, and
right.
you're thinking, what battery system do I buy? So up to now, the answer has been a lead-acid. Lead-acid batteries already cost about $100 per kilowatt-hour, mm-hmm. $100 per kilowatt-hour. You might think, well, wait, this is $350 per kilowatt-hour.
Right.
But it's what it is that with a lithium battery, you can get a much deeper discharge
okay.
with it. So with a lead-acid battery, you can't really run it below 50%. And so that means you have to buy more lead to battery. If you plan to do a
right.
deep discharge, which if you're off-grid, you're going to do,
right.
you have to buy a much bigger lead battery system in order to meet your needs.
Right. Now, a lead battery is like a car battery. I've had an electric mower